Great. It's the top of the hour, and I'll go ahead and start introductions as others can. Thank you again, everybody, for joining us for today's call, which is Youth It Up. Again, if you need access to CARTS for today's call, please go to the April website at www.april-rural.org, and you can follow the CART link on the home page. Again, if you have any difficulties during this process, you're welcome to email me, mary.olson@mso.umt.edu, and I can do that link or help you troubleshoot to the best of my ability. Today's call will also be recorded thanks to Bill Cochran and Skill, and the audio recording and transcript will be available online on our website underneath the IL Conversations tab following this call. And during today's call, at any point, if you would like to add to the topic from your experience or you have questions to ask, you can please press *2, and that raises your hand on the phone, and then I can make your mic live. And then once again, once your question has been answered, if you can press *2 again, lowers your hand and helps me manage some of the online traffic. So I'd appreciate it. Also, please remember to evaluate our conversation on our website following the call under the IL Conversations tab. Your feedback is so important to us, and it can only make us stronger as an organization. This IL Conversation has been brought to you by the IL, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program in partnership with Nickel and April. Support for this IL Conversation is provided by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Community Living. No official endorsement of the Department of Health and Human Services should be inferred. And without further ado, I would like to introduce you to your presenters. Today we have with us June Hermanson, who is the founder and program director for the Montana Youth Leadership Forum and the Montana Youth Transition Network. The past 16 years of June's career have been spent on how to build a system that will make the transition from high school to the adult world a smooth process for youth with disabilities and their families. June was born congenitally legally blind and has traveled the path that she now works to make smooth for young people. During her high school years, June didn't test very well, and she and her parents were told by numerous teachers she had no potential. Her parents never accepted that. She went to college, first getting her BA in social work and her master's in education. June's worked in the field of disability services for over 30 years, and she often states, "I believe that together we can build a seamless system of support for youth with disabilities that can make transition from high school seamless and contribute to the success of young people." We also have with us today Kimberly Tito, and she is the executive director of ABLE South Carolina, where she guides the staff in applying the philosophy of independent living to real situations. Kimberly holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Human Development from Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts, and a Master's of Social Work from the University of South Carolina. During Kimberly's time in Boston, she completed a leadership program at Harvard University, where nonprofit management became an interest. Kimberly has developed several innovative independent living programs to reach populations, as well as developed an international program to promote disability rights. She is also governor appointed to the South Carolina Statewide Independent Living Council and appointed by the South Carolina State Superintendent of Education to the South Carolina Advisory Council on the Education of Students with Disabilities, where she serves as the co-chair. We also have Kathy Whiteman with us, and she has been an independent living specialist at the Montana Independent Living Project in Butte for 6.5 years. She's worked very closely with vocational rehabilitation to match students up with work experiences in their communities. She also has fundraised to build an ILP and usable by all nonprofits in the community. We are so excited today to have these speakers with us and the wealth of knowledge that they bring, as well as the knowledge that all of you guys on the call bring. So without further ado, I would like to turn it over to our speakers.
And who goes first, Mary?
Is that June?
Kathy, so, I mean, does it matter who begins or how do you?
No, why don't you go ahead with Cassidy? Is there any way you could put your microphone up closer or your phone up closer?
Is this better? Can you hear me any better?
That is a little better. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try to speak slowly and clearly. So, like she said, my name's Kathy. I work for Montana Independent Living Project in Butte, Montana, which is in the southwest part of the state. This community has about 34,000 people that live in it. Then I serve the more rural communities around here. My journey with working with the PRIETS program started about a year and a half ago when one of the voc rehab counselors came to the office and kind of handed me a sheet and said that this was coming, but they didn't know what to do with it. And so immediately I lit up because I knew that this could be such a game changer for the students that I was working with. So the first thing I thought of was, I have this young person's group that I'm working with, and I need to connect them, those that I know the best, with the community members that I know the best. And so I really went to work taking those connections and one at a time kind of matching up some of those students with experiences in the community. So, you know, the first one I did was a young man I had been working with for a couple of years, and he was just, I would recommend him to anyone. So I matched him up through the city government, and he was working with Parks and Recreation. And as I was doing that, I was noticing there was a lot of questions about, you know, where they have union members, and, you know, there's some issues around that we were noticing. And so I was able to work it out, though, that we are the employer of record, and we were covering the unemployment insurance and the workers' compensation. And so they did end up agreeing to do that work experience with us. And so that was really positive, and we haven't done one with the city again because of union issues, but I am, if anyone's familiar with that, I'd be happy to talk with them about that. Then after that, I had some other young people, and I became really discouraged because I went to the school, and there was a young man that I was going to work with one-on-one to find a match, and the school said, what are you going to do, find him a job looking out the window? That's all he can do. And I was devastated by that. So I was able to work even harder to really find out what some of his passions were, and he loves music. Matched him up at a record store. And after that experience, his just personality began to shine through. So that was really positive. And so I've done those kind of things myself with just partnership between me and Voc Rehab for about 10 students. But when it got really exciting was when I started to grow a deeper connection with another council that I'm a board member on, Silver Bow Developmental Disabilities Council. They have two employment coaches that work there, and they're both phenomenal. And so we saw a real gateway to kind of get in there and get them working on PRIETS to get some of more students matched. And so we used all of our resources together. And so we started thinking outside of the box a lot. We were sending students out to the community colleges to do work on the construction program when they would go out and we're building with Habitat for Humanity, or we have a carousel that's being built here. Any project they were doing, we were able to match young people up to go out to those sites and have them be paid to do this work, which has led since then to students now going into that construction program at the school. And then we had one young man, he was working on the carousel project, and one of the contractors there said, I need someone to lay tile, and he just hired him outright. And so he's not even utilizing PRIETS right now. He was such a good employee. So the most exciting thing I think now that Montana Independent Living Project has started is in Helena, which is home office, which is the state capital, they started a contract in, I believe, May, a targeted service group contract with vocational rehabilitation that through the PRE-ETS program. So what it is, they're calling it Green Core, and it was developed based around the strengths and passions of our independent living specialist, Les, in our Helena office. He's a master gardener, and he has tons of connections in the community to all kinds of community gardens, to farms. And so they really wanted to hone in on his passion and those connections to build this agreement with Folk Rehab. So what they decided to do was do this contract, employ up to 10 young people. I think the goal was 10. Those 10 young people would work up to 10 hours a week, and they would be paid 10 an hour, which was the prevailing wage in the area for the kind of work they would be doing. So through this employment opportunity, they're connected to the 11 community gardens that are around Helena, where they'll work on special projects that benefit the garden as a whole. There's a food co-op that they go to where they harvest food, they do weeding, do all that kind of stuff that will then be sold at farmers market or will be donated to the food pantry. And then the office is actually located in a center, and so they took those connections with that town center, and now those young people are working on sidewalk maintenance, upkeep of flowers, weeding, rejuvenating areas that have been neglected or overlooked, and are now helping to revitalize the area. So they're doing those, we have a van that we're using to transport them, and they're going to the different locations, and there's 10 students, but maybe like 3 or 4 will go at any given time to the different projects. So they're getting to know each other really well, and they're working side by side with community members, and the impact has been amazing. And then every Monday, they are doing job readiness classes at the job service. So not only are they out getting these work experiences, but now they're getting really comfortable with the staff at the job service. They're getting that job preparation. They're gaining an extra level of comfort in every aspect of work. And then we've been doing some self-determination classes through a partnership with the Aspire Grant, which I believe is targeted for students that have SSI. But all of the young people from the work group have been coming to those classes, and we've been talking about advocacy and just, you know, goal setting. And I have only met them a couple of times, but I can just tell every time I'm with them, their goals are getting greater. They're speaking more about their passions and what they don't want to do. And so the impact on them has been really exciting. And so we all know the benefit of PRE-ETS, but now this community impact is being just amplified. And so they're getting these work experiences. People from the work experiences are recognizing their strengths. And now they're being invited outside of that to do some work experience. After this, when school starts again, they're getting more comfortable. Their social skills have improved. And so this has all been made possible by a partnership through vocational rehabilitation and PRE-ETS. So how did they do it? They partnered to do this targeted service contract. The 10 students do not have to be Voc Rehab clients, but obviously with the hope that they will sign up eventually. And it was a two-part proposal. So the first part was they will cover the contract will cover the employee less, his time and expenses, and then some transportation costs, as not all of the students have transportation. And then the wages of the students. So the prevailing wage, as I said, was $10 an hour, which is amazing. And that was determined through a temp agency, where if they were to hire someone off the street, what would it be to do these jobs? Then on top of that, we're using that temp agency to be the employer record. So they're processing the payroll, they're covering the unemployment insurance and the workers' compensation. So all of those costs have been built into this contract. And what they've done is set some benchmarks determine, you know, is it going well, and when they will be paid. So in exchange, Montana Independent Living Project must supply a list of names of the students that are participating. And then midway through, which is, you know, right around now, MILP has to supply a report to let them know how it's going, what are they doing, what impact has it made. And then at the end, they will be paid for every student that finishes the program based on the contract requirements. So right now they have 10, and so they've hung in there. So at the end, MILP will then be reimbursed for their work under this contract. Les, our staff member, did not need to be a CRP. He's doing part of the contract that he can do it. And then the contract's up in October, but it can be renewed for up to 5 years if they see that it's a successful program. Obviously, our hope would be, this is a pilot project in our Helena office, and we have two other satellite offices, and we'd like to duplicate that, maybe not exactly the same way, but under the same kind of contract idea. And so now for the future, these young people are going back into school, and just yesterday we had our last self-determination class, and we were talking about goals, and now they're starting to really hone in on some of the other things they want to do. I want to be a graphic designer. I'm really interested. Veterinarian. And so now we can take those goals with, they have this work base under them, and we can start placing them in other positions around the community. So, you know, working on soft skills as we move forward and keep building toward their goals. My favorite thing about Prietz is just really getting all these young people out to the community and making those lifelong connections, especially in these more rural communities. Those can be jobs for a very long time when they see what great workers can come out of this. So that's kind of the long and short of that program, and I don't do that, but if anyone were to have questions about that, you're welcome to email me or contact me, and I can put you in touch.
Great. Thank you, Kathy. And again, I wanted to let folks know that are joining us, if you have a question or you have something that you would like to add, you can push star 2. What that does is it raises your hand, and then I can make your mic live. And then along with that, I apologize for the beeping. As folks are arriving, I'm looking into it now to see if I can turn that feature off. Hopefully I can get that figured out. But thank you again, Kathy. And let's see, we might have one question. And we also have a couple more speakers who are also going to be talking. So, hi, do you have a question?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
So this Leo with Center for Independence and SIL in Lakewood, Washington. And I kind of jumped in a little bit when you guys had already started, and I wanted to make sure I heard you guys correctly. When you're talking about that pilot program, is this funding through the PETS program, P-E-T-S, through VR?
Yes. So,
right.
The Pre-Employment Transition Services, we've been calling it PRET, so that it doesn't...
Oh, okay.
Like a PET. Yeah.
Yes. And how did you go about with getting that? Was it hard to get that contract?
So I think they started the discussions, you know, probably a month or two prior to when they wanted to begin the contract, and it definitely took some back and forth conversations and kind of nailing down what the contract would look like exactly. And because it was a pilot program, now they'll know, I think, in the future if some things need to be changed or not. But because there's so much funding around this program right now, it felt like they could ask for a lot and then be told no on things that maybe were too much. So it's kind of like going big and then coming down from there if it didn't seem appropriate.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, we were notified that this was coming, and I kept asking people in the DVR, high up in the DVR office, asking when this contract was going to be available, and they said they would let me know. And then all of a sudden, time passes by, and it's already been set up, and they've selected people already to do this, and we weren't even included or had a chance to be included for this.
I think Les let's let June and Kimberly talk a little bit. They're going to talk a little bit about how they secured some of these contracts.
Okay.
From that point of view, and then absolutely, let's come back to your question if it's not answered.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And this is Kimberly Tiso. I'm the executive director of ABLE South Carolina. We are a center, and we serve 23 counties, which actually makes up half of our state. When I came on board in 2011, we did not have, of course, any youth programs at the time. And that was one of our priorities. That was one of our board priorities. That was one of our staffing priorities, was to start establishing youth, because that is our next generation. So we started developing programs, and really it takes a lot of work to establish relationships, but showing your center's worth is so important. Getting your foot into the youth movement and showing that SILs have a very important role to play. We currently have about 10 different funding sources for 10 different youth programs, ranging from our most popular program, which is called EQIP, which is run by Rachel Kaplan, who's done some national presentations on this. But the EQIP program is a statewide program, and it works with young adults to build up leadership skills. So a lot of self-advocacy, a lot of professionalism. But then what we do with these next leaders is we teach them how to go into the school systems and provide that self-advocacy. So once we train them, they're going out into the community and teaching the independent living philosophy and teaching different self-advocacy skills, soft skills, employment skills, and disability rights, which is, we all know, is very important, because I know as a young person with a disability, when I was growing up, I had no clue about disability rights until I got to high school, and that really needs to start very, very early on. But we also just recently took on the Youth Leadership Forum, and that is funded by our Developmental Disabilities Council. And so this was our first year that we got the opportunity to plan that, and we planned that with our other two centers in our state, and they were very much involved in the staffing of YLF just to make sure that we're promoting that IL philosophy within YLF. And it was a very successful outcome, and we're looking forward to many, many years of coordinating that program as well. We also, one of the most unique programs that we have for youth is actually we are collaborating very closely with our Parent Training Information Center, which kind of the opposite of SILS, which is a organizations that are operated, run and operated by parents of children with disabilities. So our philosophy is very, very different, and we absolutely had some headbutting in the very beginning. But now that organization really embraces disability rights and recognizes the importance of that peer-to-peer. So they have actually contracted with us to provide all of their youth services. So we're providing that self-advocacy, soft skills, transitioning the home from the parents' home into the community more. So we're doing a number of services with that. And then one of our most one of our newest programs will actually be from PET funding. It's not through our agency, but it is through the Commission for the Blind, which is a VR agency for people who are blind and have low vision. So we are getting a pretty sizable contract with them to offer all of their youth services as well to all that pre-employment work. And that was a lot of work in the very beginning of getting our service is known to everyone that offers our youth programming, so that they can see that we are now the lead in our state for youth programs. And so that's very important, especially because we are a center. And then we do a lot of collaboration with our South Carolina Department of Education. They actually pay us to go into schools to assist with helping students lead their own IEPs and developing those self-advocacy and transition goals. And then we're also do professional development for the Department of Ed and teaching teachers ability rights and also teaching teachers how to support their students with self-advocacy and independence and letting go. So we're very busy. We have about 18 staff members who are youth on our staff and are associated with youth programs. We very much strongly believe in the philosophy that youth are better equipped with going into classrooms and working with other youth than anyone else. So we try to keep that philosophy going within our organization. But that youth programs are definitely the heart of ABLE South Carolina, and we are so excited to see the next generation of disability leaders in our state.
Great. Why don't we go ahead and move to June, if that's all right, and then once we get a feel for a little more about what our speakers' expertise areas are, let's open it up for a great conversation after that.
Okay. This is June Hermanson, and I'm program director for two statewide programs in the state of Montana. One is the Montana Youth Leadership Forum, and the other being the Montana Youth Transitions Project. Our Leadership Forum just celebrated its 17th year, and the Transitions Project is in its 10th year of existence. As we talk about the youth funding, having been doing this for about the last 20 years on trying to secure funds for youth, it's great to watch the way things have evolved since WIOA in the 2 years since it was signed. You know, one of the things that we did on the front end is to make sure that we were at the table as a stakeholder. I don't know if you've had the chance to read through WIOA, but each state has its own coordinated state plan through your Department of Labor. And all of the key partners then are listed in that. Ironically, higher education isn't listed in it as a key partner, but adult basic ed is. Just some things like that. So being aware of what the law says, we started out with that understanding of the law, knowing the timelines about when the coordinated state plan had to be into the feds, and wanting to be and making sure that we were listed as a stakeholder in this plan. And so we worked with vocational rehabilitation to make sure that the Youth Leadership Forum and the Youth Transitions Project were identified as key stakeholders in youth programs. And then in Montana, last year they had a meeting where all the stakeholders came together for a WIOA statewide meeting. We were very lucky because we got to make a presentation to all of the stakeholders at that conference. Next week is the second annual WIOA statewide conference, and we will be present again at that conference. We don't have a speaking role this year, but we do want everybody to know that we consider ourselves a leader and a major stakeholder in the whole concept and planning for youth services for youth with disabilities. I do want to clarify that both of our projects that I'm directed for I'll fall under North Central Independent Living Services out of Great Falls, Montana. And so we pretty much function independently, but we're fiscally attached to the Independent Living Center. So everything we do is geared towards independent living or has that whole independent living flavor. So what we've tried to do is once we made sure everybody knew we were here and existed, so we spent 2 years talking to anybody that will listen to us, then we've taken some of the plans. We all have strategic plans and visions and missions, and so we took some of those and tried to start to build some of our fantasies that we'd had in the past. For instance, the Youth Leadership Forum, we are going to expand that through a contract for pre-employment transition services for a step two. So we will do our basic Youth Leadership Forum, and then next summer those youth will receive, if they go through the forum, they receive 1 year of follow-along services, and then they will go through My Life Step 2, which will be a program that is a step up where they do volunteer work, job shadowing, health management, financial integrity classes, those types of things in the Step 2 program. One of the other things that our VR agency wanted us to think about was taking the Youth Leadership Forum out to a rural, taking it to a flavor in rural Montana, because we're so vast. And so we will be doing that on a quarterly basis. We'll be going to some very rural communities, and doing an abbreviated version of our Youth Leadership Forum. So our Youth Leadership Forum program will be extending to two more components, both of which will be part of the new, well, actually, we signed the contract on July 1, and so vocational rehabilitation, they, of course, have some numbers for us that they want us to achieve both in that step two and in those rural communities, but they're very achievable numbers. So, we took some of their ideas through long conversations and partnership with them, so we took some of their ideas and put them into place. In the Youth Transitions Project, that project is comprised of parents, professionals, and youth with disabilities. And we always talk about the three-legged stools for a successful transition. And those three components are what we consider the three legs of the stool. We have an annual conference. We have a website. We have regional groups that meet on a quarterly basis. And so what we wanted to do in that project is we will be extending two components there. And we've started one of those, and one of them is family transition plan training. I just got back from one of the trainings yesterday, and what we do is bring families together where we do how families can help with self-determination in the home. And then we facilitate discussion between the youth and the family about transition goals, about, you know, defining their disability and just some of those self-awareness issues as well as disability acceptance and the history and culture of disability. So that family training, we had our contract for the Transitions Project is on a federal fiscal year, October 1 to September 30th, but because VR wanted to see that family training started as soon as possible, they did give us an amended contract that started on May 1st to get these summer family trainings off the ground. So our new contract then will, we will continue with the family trainings, and just even in these first 2 months of this effort, we've got like 4 requests to go out and do the family training. And then the final component that we're going to be adding to the Transitions Project is the student-led IEPs. And so that's something that we strongly believe in, just along the lines of self-determination. And so, but again, as we developed all of the ideas, getting it into the contracts with the various projects and components, and making sure you can agree on the numbers you need to meet is significant. One of the things that I don't know if folks have read through the 900-plus pages of the regulations, but there's things in there that we started a number of our efforts when the law was first passed, with the anticipation knowing that the regs would be coming out, and it would be changing some of the ideas that we had. So, for instance, pre-employment transition services student was perceived to be that student that was only in high school But from the interpretations of the regs, at least that we've discussed in this state, is the if that youth graduated in May but is registered to go to some kind of training program that begins, let's say, in August, that student would still be eligible for those pre-ed services. So, you know, but breaking that all down in regard to how the regs affect the implementation that's taken place in your state, I think is key. So if you haven't had the opportunity to sit down and talk to your the VR administration, you know, I'd encourage you to do so. At least that's how I felt. And then they kept us abreast of the changes and their interpretation of those regulations. So I think that because we're only, 6 weeks into the regulations, I think that we're probably going to continue to see some changes there. But I guess what I would, and those people that know me, Mary knows me, and I kind of live in a fantasy world, but I think we're at the point where if you know your state's allotment for those pre-employment transition services and how much money needs to be allotted, you know, I encourage you to think about your mission and your vision and what your fantasy might be in regard to expanding services or improving services for youth. I think it's a wonderful time to be able to reach some of those dreams. So I guess with that, I'll just be quiet, Mary.
Oh, no. Well, I think this is such a great start, and I knew that we had a rock star presenter, but I'm always impressed with how much more you all know than I even knew. So with that, if you can press *2 on your phone, you can ask any questions, comments, join the conversation. And I do actually have one already. And if you have a question for a specific presenter, please just let us know that. Or if it's just in general, let us know that as well. All right. Did you have a question?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I'm sorry. I didn't know that it was me. Okay. I just have a question for any of the presenters. As far as the transition and when you go into the schools or you are teaching classes, what curriculum are you using?
So I apologize. Your phone is breaking up a little bit, but the question was for any of the presenters, and it was if you're going into a school in teaching programs, what kind of curriculum are you using? Is that correct?
No, it's just the schools. With the transition programs, I noticed that she was talking about the family training. What curriculums are they using?
This is June. The curriculum that we're using in the transition project here is curriculum that we've developed, pulled together from a variety of resources, and that goes for our family training, our self, or student-led IEPs, and then we also have a soft skills training that we've gone out to the schools with. Again, we've pulled together a variety of resources. The project coordinator for the Youth Transitions Project is a special ed teacher, and so she loves putting together curriculum. And so what we've done with our soft skills training is it's in two different fashions. One is for the students, and then we also do a soft skills training for the professionals so that we can make sure that once we leave the area that the have the skills and the materials for the soft skills training. And our soft skills training, for instance, is up on our website, so anyone can access it.
And this is Kimberly, and we've pretty much done the same thing. We've created our own curriculum by using a number of different curriculums, but putting the IL philosophy within and instilling it in all of our curriculum that we use. We also pull in resources as needed. We do have an attorney on our staff, and we work very closely with Protection and Advocacy for one of our transition programs that we do with families to discourage guardianship. We pull in legal stuff, legal curriculum that was developed with PNA and one of our staff members. And then we And then it's also one size doesn't fit all, too. We have really had to, we've learned this, is we've had to really modify our curriculum quite a bit depending on what classroom that we go into in the schools, and also depending on our even our one-on-one transition supports that we provide. We have found it that it's very difficult to use a set curriculum, that we're always having to modify our curriculum and adjusting it based on whatever the school needs or whatever that individual is needing.
Thank you.
Great. Are there other questions or comments? Oh, let's see. Can you guys tell I'm, like, learning how this goes as we go? All right. Did you have a question or comment?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, my name is Mary Beth, and I'm an independent living specialist focusing on youth transition at Liberty Resources in Philadelphia. I would like to ask any or all of the speakers, you're talking about so much parent involvement. I have a lot of difficulty with that. You know, I schedule the meetings. I do it around their schedule. How do you get such passionate parent involvement for the youth with disabilities? I'd like for the parents to be working with the youth as a collaboration, and I have a hard time with that sometimes. The youth are getting it and making the transitions, but it would be so much stronger with the youth, with the parents' support. Can you advise on that a little bit?
Yeah, this is Kimberly, and we're actually doing a session on this in April with a parent-run organization that's coming. Parents are very difficult. I mean, we went into this knowing that parents are one of the barriers to transition, because they're normally wanting to coddle their children, and we see them more enabling than empowering. But being able to reach the parents, what we've noticed is also the way that we can reach the youth. So having that honest conversation. As centers, I think that those conversations can go a lot better with parents, with saying, hey, we're individuals with disabilities, and this is how we see your interaction with your child. Your child has a lot more potential, blah, blah, blah. But that we've had to have those really hard conversations. We call them circle meetings with parents, and saying, you know, we're working with the individual, but when the individual is ready to transition, you've got to be there supporting them. You've got to be empowering, and then really teaching that enabling versus empowering, what that means, showing successes of other young adults with disabilities who have successfully transitioned, showing parents that that it's okay to be concerned, but they've got to learn how to let go. And it's an ongoing difficulty that our organization has, but just being really nice, very honest, and sometimes giving that parent that really nice, honest feedback, that how enabling can very much be detrimental to the transition of their youth.
I do follow all of them rules. Would you suggest contacting individual students, parents, rather than trying to do it in a group meeting?
Rather than
inviting them to the school or to Liberty Resources or, you know, the sales, like, rather than inviting them here, maybe call or reach out to the parents personally.
And we've done it a number of different ways. We've done it in group environments and then also sit down circle meetings, but we go into schools and do a lot of IEP advocacy, too, and what we are upfront with is we're not advocating for the parent. We're not going to actually advocate for the youth. We're going to teach the young adult how to advocate during their IEP meetings. But what the parent wants is not what we're going to advocate for, because that's not who we work for. But to answer your question...
No, of course, I know that.
Yeah. And to answer your question, what we do is... we've seen that individually with each family works a lot better, because sometimes when a lot of parents get into the same room, it can become an interesting, almost turns into somewhat of a pity party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that.
this is June from Montana, and in our statewide conference, we had a sectional that we called Parent to Parent. and it was only parents allowed in the room. And one of the things we started that out with was, let's talk about the guilt, grieving, the things that come with an initial diagnosis that only parents can share. And then, you know, and that really took off and built. Now, the family training that we're doing right now is that we're doing that. We're separating the youth from the parents and talking about the grieving process while the youth do some work on defining their disability. And then we bring them back together. But we have subcontracted with our parent organization. And so once those families make it through the training, the parent organizations have developed mentor training. And so those mentors that are with us during the training will do all the follow-up with the families once they go home. And at least we have found that if you have follow-up after somebody goes home because you can't think of all the issues to talk about when you're in the meeting, you think of them at 3 in the morning, you know, so that's at least, and like I say, we're just starting this out, but that's how we have it built at this point. Half of the training, the youth and parents are separated. Half of the training, they're together. And then when they walk out of the room, they have the mentoring network that will assist them in the day-to-day activities they come up against.
Thank you. I will try some of these tips.
Great. Thank you.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I think there's no magic answer to this and that we're all kind of struggling with figuring out the best way to reach the parents. The ones that always show up always come when you advertise parent groups or other things. And so it's trying to find those other ones that aren't coming to the table. And I think you're right. Some of that is that one-on-one outreach. And what I've done is I had someone I really felt passionate and really was going to be a good candidate for the pre-employment transition services, and her dad just wasn't going to go to any meeting, help her get signed up or anything. And so I went to the house, and so we were able to really get kind of down to why it was important and talk about that. And so I think the more we can get that one-on-one stuff started, hopefully the parents will start to communicate with each other about, hey, did you know that so-and-so is getting paid to do this? And, you know, here's the benefit of working with the Independent Living Center. And but getting that started, I think, is a challenge.
We've learned that parents are, I mean, it's all out of nothing but love. Is they're trying to protect their young adults, and they're scared. And, you know, and just, you know, filling them up with successes and making it a very positive atmosphere, but being truthful with them. I mean, I think that is something that has really worked for us. I mean, we've been able to change parents' perceptions with they were getting ready to get guardianship of their young adult, and we were, you know, able to change their perception of that and have them, you know, they ended up making the decision to stop getting that guardianship because they see so much more potential in their young adult. But by
wonderful,
you know, giving resources, I mean, there's just so much that parents who have that fear, it's just they're just missing all these resources that is really surrounding them. They just have never been connected to.
Thank you for all your suggestions.
Awesome. So go ahead, and I just unmuted another caller. You can go ahead.
Yes, my name's Lubianne Collier. I'm an IL coordinator with SKILL in Pittsburgh. I am very active with Disability Mentoring Days. I will be holding my 10th event here in Pittsburgh in November, and then have started another one several counties away where we work with the high school students with disabilities and on soft skills and tours of businesses and some mentoring. Do any of the three of you use DMD to help jumpstart or help be introduced to any of the students?
This is June. And in Montana, we used to do Disability Mentoring Day in conjunction with AAPD. And what we did then, it evolved into ongoing. We built in, instead of just doing the mentoring day for one day of the year, we went ahead and we do that year-round now. We have regional groups, and part of the work that those regional facilitators do is do a mentoring day job shadowing, but we do it year-round.
Okay.
But Disability Mentoring Day was definitely a springboard and a model that we use.
This is Kimberly. South Carolina has a Disability Mentoring Day, but it is operated by VR usually, and we go, but it has not necessarily connected us with the number of youth that we wanted to. What we've noticed is really just how we've been able to recruit more youth is reaching out to the schools and then the parent-run organizations, just with connecting with parents who want services for their youth. But schools, you know, when you make relationships with teachers, I mean, that just really opens the door.
It really helps a lot. My D&D committee here is made up of, I have three different teachers, one who's been with me the entire 10 years, and then we have VR, Kansas Works, some committee members from the community, but it has helped us with that. So I just wasn't sure if, she said previously, if you guys used that as a springboard or if you used it at all. I appreciate your answers. Thank you.
Great. Well, we've got hands all over the place, so I hope you guys aren't got some water to wet your whistle. All right. So go ahead with our next question. Hi, did you have a question? All right. We will move on.
Oh.
Hi, go ahead. Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. My name is Pamela. I'm a youth transition specialist here with Reach of Dallas. And I had a question listening in to some of the experiences that the other SEALs are having with the youth. My question is the examples of access to WEO through VR funding, is that the PETS that was mentioned earlier and through the parent org information center? Is that some of the funding sources?
The PETS funding had come from the VRs, so okay. VR vocational rehabilitation. And there's a number of categories that they, number of services that are offered under PETS. But the parent training is actually a federal grant that is in your state, probably most, yeah, definitely has a parent training information center. That is a separate grant that is from the U.S. Department of Education, and it has a new piece to it, which I think has thrown a lot of the parent training information centers off, is because they are now required to offer services, direct services to youth around self-advocacy and job exploration and all of that as well.
Okay.
Well, this is June, and what we did is VR did contract with us for doing the family transition plan training, and then we actually subcontract with our parent organization to do the mentoring and follow-up. So we received the funds through Voc Rehab, and then we subcontract with our parent agency.
Okay. Are there any other funding sources, I guess, that are out there that we might be able to tap into or develop?
I would suggest your DD councils. They're doing a lot, I think, nationally around youth. And then also probably reaching out to your Department of Education and really getting that relationship going the special education department within them. They can help connect you with districts and all of that in your area. And schools, I mean, they come with some funding. So if you really make that relationship and sell your services and you know, start asking, you know, talking about, you know, establishing a contract with them, that could be, you know, a position or two for your center to be able to offer those services.
Thank you so much.
Great. So I'm going to scoot along here. All right, go ahead, please, with your question. Hey, did you have a question? How about you? Did you have a question?
Yes. I was wondering if someone can explain what they do with establishing those relationships to establish those contracts with VR for the PEDS or with the Department of Education.
Yes, go ahead. So with this is Kimberly with ABLE. What we have done with, I guess, first came Department of Education. So what we did is we started really attending the state advisory councils for the education of students with disabilities, and started to talk about. And, you know, when they talk about, you know, do you have any public announcements, start really advertising your youth programs, talking about what you're doing to start up a program or what you're doing to what you're doing within your youth programs. That's really how we got connected. We also reached out to a lot of schools, and, you know, each school district is very different, and just establishing that rapport takes a lot of work to get into schools, because some schools require you to have an MOU with them, and but really don't give up until, you know, you're being able to provide these services to the youth. That was the first funding stream that came in. And then we really worked very, very well with our DD Council, and they provide a number of our SIL funding for the youth programs. And then with the PETS funding, this is actually a contract that is new, and that this is with the South Carolina Commission for the Blind. And so what we'll be doing is going out to the schools and providing pre-employment services, teaching them those soft skills for employment, employment rights, just a number of things. But that relationship actually, I had a note in my box one day that was handwritten, and it said, Kimberly, I really need you to call me about this RFP. And it was from one of the directors at the South Carolina Commission for the Blind. And because of our youth reputation, they wanted us to provide the services for some of the services. And then we got them connected with the other centers in our state as well. So we all have contracts going in with the Commission for the Blind for PETS funding now. So it takes a lot of work, but once you get recognized, you get recognized, I think.
And this is June, and I would really encourage folks to locate your state plan through your Department of Labor and see who all the partners are, and then get yourself introduced to all of those stakeholders. And I bet they're having some statewide meetings, planning sessions or whatever. And if you can be at the table or on the email list or whatever, I think that's huge. So, like I say, knowing those state plans and what your state has written into them as goals, I think helps you be able then to gear some of your thoughts and requests for funding to coincide with those goals.
I echo that, June. We really had an interesting time with getting put into the WIO estate plan, but being at that table, because that's going to everyone that's connected with WIOAS, and if you're even mentioned or at that table or at those meetings, they're going to reach out to you.
Every year they have a huge seminar, all the different.
Was that Cassie?
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, sorry.
Awesome.
you have anything to add, I guess, since I was...
No, I mean, I definitely, I echo what these ladies said. And for us, I think a lot of it was just really for the pre-employment transition dollars, really getting in there and having those connections and then asking the questions and getting asked to whoever can answer them is, this money's out there. How can we put it to use? Independent Living has written into it as one of the goals. And so finding out how do we make this happen? Where's the money and how can we develop these contracts so that we're using it to benefit these?
Great. All right. Well, does anybody have any questions or success stories or comments they would like to share? You can press star 2 in order to raise your hand. Okay. Oh, let me. All right, go ahead, please.
Hi. One of the speakers mentioned posting curriculum on their website. Which website was that?
That's the Montana Youth Transitions, all spelled out, .org. And what we have posted there is our soft skills curriculum. And it is updated on a regular basis. MontanaYouthTransitions.org.
Great. Thank you so much. Anyone else have any curriculum posted?
Ellen, I donated it. Independent.
You know, and another option too is that we always have mentors. Actually, one of Kimberly's staff is a mentor, and we've got several other mentors in the country, the April Youth Peer Mentoring Program. And so if you want to learn more about that, you can always contact myself afterwards, or you can contact Sierra from our website.
It's to promote all the different groups out there.
And I think I apologize. I'm having a hard time with the traffic.
Just
press start to lower their hands when they're done. That would be great.
People in DDA, people who have system doesn't necessarily work with the wash wall.
I'm going to have to mute everybody again and sorry. Okay. Go ahead with your question, please. Do you have a question? Hi, please go ahead with your question.
Okay, this is Donna Rasmussen. I'm the Youth and Vocational Supervisor at the Lake County Center for Independent Living in Illinois. And I just want to share that we have found that there are some really good activities and the curriculum is meaty for it's through the Department of Labor, the skills to pay the bills in the Office of Disability.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. Skills to pay
it's I'll give you the website. It's, you know, dol.gov. And then if you get, or you can actually just type in skills to pay the bills and then look for the Department of Labor's skills to pay the bills link, and you can request them to send you a binder. It's a bound, a spiral bound book. It's really nice with a bunch of activities, and you can get a CD and a DVD with it too. So just FYI.
Great. Hi, did you have a question?
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the skills to pay the bills. I have used that many times in my transition sessions with the young adults, and it is very helpful. They send you as many as you want, and if you need more, you just write back to them, and they send you more. I just wanted
to
that up and encourage it.
Thank you. I've never heard of that, so that's great. All
that's
right.
All.
Any
thank
questions?
You.
Yeah. Hi, did you have a question?
Hello.
Hi.
Is this Mary?
It is.
Mary, this is Sarana. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Sarana.
Hi. I don't know
what I can contribute to this conversation, because it sounds like folks are doing a lot of real cool things and finding resources, financial resources to do more, which is something that I'm definitely going to be looking into. We do have a, we did take part in the mentoring program that April provided. Mary and Mike Beers came down and did a training for us and even provided us with their curriculum, which we took and massaged it to where it would flow for us. And we call it our hands-on education resource option and enrichment skills, which we call our HEROES program. And we do go into the schools and work with the transition classes. We do all the, you know, all the things that have already been talked about, the history, culture, accepting your own disability, and all those things that kids are not going to get from just their regular curriculum. We have had some graduations from the program, and the kids seem to be really excited about getting to be recognized as members who participated in the program. And then we continue to work with those students even after they graduate from our program and try and direct them to our center for any additional IL skills training. So it's been really and the relationship that we've built with the school, the schools, with the teachers, that has been very key in helping us get that accomplished. So that's what we do here in Arkansas.
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Sarah. I always love an impromptu shout-out.
Well, if it hadn't been for you guys, you know, we wouldn't have been able to start it. So.
Well, thanks. All right. We're getting close. We've got a couple more hands raised. Oh, my friend, did you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, my name is Tito. I work for the Resource Center for Independent Living in Utica, New York. And I just wanted to talk quickly about our youth leadership program that we have here. It's been in existence for many years, and we've been blessed to have some of the participants that we have, and a few of them have gone on to become advocates who go all over the country. Advocating. I also like the idea of the skills to pay the bills, and I am going to look into that. I'm also, one of our programs here at RCIL is called the Main Street Youth Program, and it is working with at-risk youth who are OPWDD, Office of People with Developmental Disabilities, eligible. Was wondering if anybody had any input on that as far as funding sources to assist with that program.
This is June, and I'm not familiar with that.
I'm not as, this is Kimberly, and I'm not either. That sounds interesting.
Well, if anybody else on the line has an answer for Tito, you can press star 2 and we can.
I know that currently we're using family support services funding for that program, but we're looking to expand it to.
Thankful. This is Grateful Tears, okay?
Beyond just youth that are Office of People with Developmental Disabilities eligible. So I was just wondering if anybody else had any ideas on that. But again, most of the stuff that that we're doing is with teaching life skills, with teaching employment skills, helping people become more independent. or self-sufficient. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for sharing. And hopefully we can get some thoughts from the audience for you. All right. Did you have a question?
Like something you would write in high school.
Oh, hi. Yeah, did you have a question for us?
Hello?
Oh. Hello. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello?
Sorry, I'm not pressing star 2. I don't know what's happening. It's just unmuting the phone on its own.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Your hand is raised. That's why I unmuted you.
Oh, sorry.
That was operational error. Let me fix that and move along. Did you have a question?
But not too much processing. Yeah, it'll probably get it because that was a good one.
Frosting.
But it's just ice cream.
Sorry, folks. I'm looking for this, trying to mute you again. Again, if you have questions, please press star 2 to raise your hand. It does prompt me to unmute you if you raise your hand. All right, did you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay. Sorry, guys, I'm...
Yeah, this was Pito. No more questions for me.
Okay, great. Well, we might be closing it out. Let's see if folks have any more questions. Please feel free to just press star 2, and that will prompt me to unmute your phone line. And also, if you're in the captioning room, you can just type in your questions, and I can voice those for you. And I think, while we're getting ready to wrap up here and looking for any more questions, do our presenters have any last final words of wisdom to folks as they're trudging on this transition voyage?
I'll wisdom out.
Can folks still hear me?
Yeah, Mary, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Do you guys have any last words before we begin to close out?
This is Kathy. I think the most impactful thing that I've been experiencing here is just really taking the community connections that I have and really creating an atmosphere that's welcoming on both ends. It benefits everyone when people are getting jobs out in the community. So use who you know and fill in Kavok Rehab so that they can be part of this program. And as this program in Helena is going, some of those students aren't even signed up with Kavok Rehab. So if you can get those contracts underway, that can be a good gateway into Kavok Rehab services as well.
Great. Anything else from June or Kimberly?
Well, this is June, and I guess I thank you for letting us do this today and share. It's just, for me, it's an exciting time. It's a time of opportunity and opportunities knocking. I'm not sure what everybody's state budget is for the pre-ets, but, find out what that budget is and follow your dreams for the youth that you serve.
Great. Kimberly, anything else?
Yeah, I just think it's, this is a really exciting time for centers, especially because we have the power to really show what we are capable of with getting our future generation ready for life. So, establish a plan, don't give up on it, and make sure that you're letting everyone know what you're doing so that your programs get recognized.
Excellent. Well, I've just really enjoyed this conversation again, and I appreciate everybody being with us. We do have time for another question. If anybody has one, you can press star 2.
And while I'm waiting for that, I just want to encourage folks, again, if you can, please go to our website and evaluate the conversation. I know that we always have a lot of room for improvement, and we really appreciate that feedback. All right, did you have a thought, comment, or question to close us out? Hello?
Thanks so much.
Did you have any comments or questions? I apologize, you guys. I'm still learning how to use this wonky system of raising hands and not, and I'm seeing some folks raising their hands. I'm not quite sure. Do you have a question? Well, if you do have questions, you can always send them to me, and I'll check in with our speakers and see if they would be willing to have, you know, their contact information up on our website. And again, you know, you can always ask us questions as well, and we can filter it out. One of the things that April does is we help provide TA to folks. And so any way that we can be helpful, we try to be. I'll give it one last try to see if those folks, I just unmuted, if you had any questions or last thoughts. Well, again, thank you, everybody, for joining us, and you can look for the transcript on our website. I appreciate you all being here today.